This episode is presented by State Farm. Having insurance isn't the same as having State Farm. It's like needing the protection of an offensive guard on the football field, but getting an elementary school crossing guard. Sure, they're both guards, but you can only trust one to keep your quarterback safe when the game is on the line. So don't settle for just any insurance when there's State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Hey, everybody.
Can't get enough of the Rich Eisen Show? You're in luck. You can find us everywhere. Watch us weekdays on Disney Plus from noon to 3 Eastern. Miss the show? We've got a podcast so you can listen anytime. But here's the best part. Our YouTube channel. Subscribe at youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show and you'll never miss a moment. Now, on with the show. This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Ready.
The Patriots. This team destroying everyone in front of them. How far can they go?
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles. Today's guest, Prime Video TNF analyst Andrew Whitworth. Pro Football Hall of Famer Kurt Warner, Savannah Bananas left fielder Robert Anthony Cruz, and now it's Rich Eisen.
Well, hey everybody, welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show on Disney Plus, the ESPN app, ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance, Sirius XM, Channel 80, those are the four. There's our podcast listeners. Hello, whenever you're listening and wherever you're listening, stop doing that. No, I can't see you. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial to have a conversation with us today. We've got not one, but two Walter Payton Men of the Year. I have no idea if Coach Rack from the Savannah Bananas is a good, great human through and through, we assume.
Very possible.
Because the Savannah Bananas are an absolute international delight.
They bring joy.
He better do well in the community because... When you got Kurt Warner and you got Andrew Whitworth on the program, we're all banana peels basically around them. So 844-204-RICH again is the number to dial here on the program. Good to see you over there, Chris.
Hey,
Brockman.
Rich. What's up, man?
Good to see you. The least sufferable member of the Rich Eisen Show, Jay Felly, is here.
Hey.
Yeah,
what's
he's
up,
not
Rich?
Sitting in judgment of any of us.
Oh, wait till the Raiders get good again.
Oh, that's good. Then you'll start acting like Brockman right now with the Patriots being the only 11-win team in the National Football
League. And then Mike can jump to my ship.
There you go.
Hey.
I don't understand him. But good to see you, Jay Felly. How are you, TJ Jefferson? What's going on, sir?
Chilling, man. How you guys doing?
Oh, we're doing great. I'll be honest with you. Yeah, I'm a little confused. Maybe you can help me.
About?
I sat here on this program the other day, and... I thought had a very, if I may, salient point in pointing out that Ole Miss did the right thing in telling Lane Kiffin you cannot have it both ways. You cannot be the head coach of Ole Miss football getting ready to take the reins of LSU football. You certainly can't do that in this day and age when there's transfer portals to talk about and signing periods and, you know, and rivalries. You can't tell us here in Oxford we're done right on the outset of the college football playoffs and expect to stay around here. The analogy I was going to make, but there were just too many other things going on, like fans showing up at private aviation gates and barbed wire fences and screaming obscenities at coaches getting on planes.
Trying to run them off the road.
Well, I mean, that's what Lane Kiffin said. By the way, one of the greatest responses, Eli Manning reposting that portion of Lane Kiffin's press conference talking about how fans of Ole Miss football were running him off the road on the way to the airport. He reposted that with the word, oops. Eli being Eli.
Eli, very
Manning.
Funny. So... Unless he's saying that was Chad Powers. I don't know. Listen, I totally understood it. Well, why would you give the head coach of LSU football unfettered access to your players as a transfer portal window eventually opens up the second day of January for a couple of weeks? Like, why would you do such a thing? And doors closed. Makes sense. Unless you need an offensive coordinator. I mean, you could knock me over with a feather. Because
I got one.
Roll tape. Is this Charlie Weiss Jr. getting on a private jet the other day? Sure looks like it.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
and I thought
walks like a Weiss.
The report was like either you're on the plane that LSU sent or you're off the plane. In the same way that Ole Miss was saying, either you're with us here in Oxford or you're over there in Baton Rouge. And so we heard yesterday, and it was confirmed by Lane himself in a statement saying, yeah, Charlie Weiss Jr., I'm fine with him staying in Oxford for the duration of the college football playoffs. And, of course, Lane put in the announcement that this was in advance of the College Football Playoff Committee making its final announcement of the playing season, the regular playing season. And it's a very crucial penultimate arranging of seeds because this is the way, this is the rest of these College Football Playoff Committee releases of what the brackets look like is all window dressing just to get us to talk about it. Mm-hmm. But the one before conference championship weekend is crucial because it does kind of pen the committee into making certain decisions based on ultimate results of the weekend, even though the committee will do whatever it wants, which is, you know, say put Alabama above Notre Dame when they have the same record, even though Alabama just had an almost loss, a pull it out of your orifice win at Auburn, which hadn't been doing anything of note, and Notre Dame's above Miami, even though Miami's beaten Notre Dame. I mean, they could do whatever the heck they want. But Lane's like, in advance of this, hey, College Football Playoff Committee, don't penalize the kids that I just left because I just left. And I read that and I thought two things. One, why in the hell would a College Football Playoff Committee filled with athletic directors and others there but for the grace of the football buyout gods go you penalize players for losing a head coach? Why would we do that? Because the analogy I wanted to make back on the other day that I neglected to, I was sitting on the campus in Ann Arbor, Michigan in 1989 when
I've been waiting for you to bring this up.
Bill Frieder says, I'm going to Arizona State to coach basketball, but I'm sticking around here to find out what the seeds are going to be for the 1989 Michigan eventual national championship winners. They're good enough. The 1989 Michigan Wolverines, I'm trying to find out what seed we're going to be. And Bo Schembechler, the athletic director, says, no, you're not. And he said, I want a Michigan man to coach a Michigan team. And he found Steve Fisher, who had really no ties to Michigan except being just freshly hired by Bill Frieder. The only reason that he was a Michigan man is because Bill Frieder wasn't anymore. And I don't know if the committee that seeded Michigan sixth in that tournament knocked them down a peg or two because who the hell was Steve Fisher? I don't know. But Michigan won six in a row and won it all and cut down the nets. So why would they penalize Ole Miss for losing their coach? And they didn't, by the way, to their credit. And I have no idea if they kept him at six because Charlie Weiss Jr. was going back to Oxford. And I thought to myself also, while I read this from Lane, if you tell Lane Kiffin get out, why is it fine for Charlie Weiss Jr. to come back? I mean, he might have handled the departure behind the scenes completely different than Lane did. There may have been a bridge that wasn't blown up like it was over the River Kwai. That may be, he may have a better relationship with the new head coach there, a better relationship with the athletic director. He may have handled it differently. I don't know. But at the end of the day, if you don't want these coaches around your players in advance of a transfer portal because they're now going to be coaching for LSU, does it matter? Like now there is technically a fox in the hen house. There's a Baton Rouge fox there. So what are we doing?
I say sabotage.
I don't know.
Sabotage.
What are they doing? Except maybe trying to win a college football playoff game. And if I'm Lane Kiffin, it makes me look beneficent that there's no hard feelings here.
Right.
You may be trying to run me off the road, but I haven't quit you yet.
Beneficent?
And yes. And, you know, I'm also showing everybody I can be an adult. You think I'm not an adult here? Take them. Take them. I don't need them yet. I'm cool here. I'll build my program here, you know, and I still have some Ole Miss, you know, love in my heart. Take the guy. And it also, you know, might improve the mailbox money having an extra comma in it by the end of the day because my contract, the terms of which apparently I'm not familiar with completely in terms of the money on it, does still have my college football playoff bonuses from Ole Miss in my contract. That's called a win-win. I come across looking cool, and I'm helping Ole Miss. You're still pissed at me. You want to run me off the road? I'll still keep you down the path. Take my guy. I don't understand it. I don't get it anymore. And maybe Ole Miss, did they run a couple practices and go, yeah, we could use the offensive coordinator back.
Yeah, right, right.
Who called who? Who called who and said, can we have Charlie? Yeah. Did somebody?
You up text?
Are you up text? Yeah, exactly, Chris. Yeah. And also, did Charlie have to fly commercial back or did Ole Miss send a plane for him? And nobody noticed because nobody was there with a torch and a pitchfork at the FBO in Baton Rouge. You know, like, how does this work? And interestingly enough, Pete Golding, the head coach there, canceled his press conference today there, saying we wanted to be about the players. And we'll talk about it on Sunday after the playoffs come out. So it'll be all about not Lane being gone and I've got the job and why did I have the offensive coordinator back? How is he here? Even though those questions I think are still germane on Sunday when he speaks. I just don't get it. Is it me?
No.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I feel better.
I know
I should ask questions I already know the answer
so
to.
So weird.
Like, how the hell does that happen? Roll the tape one more time. We can't play the sound on this because of the nonstop curse words coming from the fans yelling at Charlie Weiss Jr. getting on the plane.
I thought I was messing up.
No.
No. We can't.
It is not
Disney
work.
Safe.
It would sound like a truck backing up rather than a plane ready to take off. But hey, welcome back if you can, you know, coordinate us a dub against the 11 seed, if that's what we're going to wind up being, the 6 seed. At home, by the way.
Home game.
So the LSU, the future LSU coach, not allowed back. He's got to go. The LSU, future LSU offensive coordinator. Here's your old Ole Miss shirt back. Okay. I've made my point. And one last thing, too, on the whole.
And another thing, Vonnegut.
Hoo-ha. Yeah. And another thing, Vonnegut. Talk about going
another
back,
thing, Vonnegut.
Talk about going back to school. The whole hoo-ha going on about, whoa, these seedings and standings and the athletic director from Arkansas doing bad 6-7 jokes with Rich Davis one week. And then the next week talking about results that matter here for this team being seated above that team. And then that reasoning makes no sense when you're saying it doesn't matter between this team and that team about this result and that one. And you're seeing all these columns and all this print going back and forth about what's right and what's wrong and whether BYU deserves it or Miami deserves it or Notre Dame deserves it or Alabama that doesn't deserve it. All of this. Where are the adults in the room to fix all of this? Because you know what's next, as I was saying, with this whole business with Lane leaving, and you're allowed to just get some tech bro, or we'll ask Andrew Whitworth later, did he, you know, put some Whitworth dollars in to get Lane free to go back to coach LSU as alma mater, or whoever's slicing these checks, you know, in a situation where the governor of Louisiana says Brian Kelly's contract is an abomination, so the athletic director's got to go, and I'm now in charge, only to hire somebody whose contract makes the other one look like it's a beer holder, you know? And all of this stuff, the NIL, the portal opening up, and the signing period opening up, the college football playoffs are going down, and the conference championships between undefeated teams that are playing for a conference championship just for seeding purposes, only to maybe beat each other up, put stuff on film to have a Big Ten team have less of a chance to win it all, as a for instance. You know what's next is somebody's got to step in the room and say, contracts for everybody, and you're not allowed to talk to anybody until the last down is played in college football, and the season is over. There's a new league year, just like the National Football League. Somebody's also got to come in and fix the scheduling, too. Because this next thing is, if Texas doesn't make it when it's not gonna, they'll be like, why didn't we play Slappy University instead of Ohio State?
Yep.
Why do we play Ohio State? Mm-hmm. What purpose does it serve?
Bingo.
To play Ohio State when we should just take somebody that is dying to come play here.
And we'll pay you to come play us.
We'll pay you seven figures to lose to us, mm-hmm. because that is what's not going to reek to high heaven to a college football playoff committee. When they're sitting in a room with their coffee breath and BO, that's a Midnight Run reference, and all of that, add that to the list of you can't pay to have a coach break his contract or hers in college sports, because you can't do that in the NFL. It's crazy. It's crazy. Giants have an opening. You know what they're going to do? They're going to find out, because he was an offensive coordinator there once, you know? Does Sean Payton want to come back and coach the Giants? What's his buyout there in Denver? Let's find out. Oh, is it $50 million?
Probably more.
Whatever. Let's pay it. You know what we'll do? We'll get somebody who's a massive sponsor of the New York Giants to scratch that check for us. And then Sean Payton, right in the middle of the season? Right on the cusp of the playoffs? Yeah. He'll just leave to go to the New York Giants, and it'll be Denver fans showing up at the FBO flipping the bird at Sean Payton. But you know what will happen is the offensive coordinator will be allowed to stay there to finish the season. After all. Does any of this sound absurd to you? Because it should. And then the seeding of the Broncos is going to be dependent on whether the offensive coordinator stays or not. And in terms of a team that is right there on the cusp, in the hunt, sniffing it, what they're going to do next year is they're going to wind up playing a UFL team, with all due respect, first week of the season. They're going to basically tell, you know, hey, we're the Denver Broncos. We are slated right now to have on our schedule next year the Atlanta Falcons. We don't want to put our potential problem on the line against them or the Bills. You know, let's cancel the Bills game and let's schedule somebody from the UFL. And then in front of the committee deciding where that team makes the playoffs or not, it'll be better. It'll be one win more, and we'll pay that money to them. And as a matter of fact, we'll get another sponsor of the Giants to do that, or the Broncos to do that. Does that make any sense to you? Of course it doesn't. But in college football, it's like, let's write columns about it.
NFL playoff committee, not a terrible idea.
Okay, thanks. You're ruining my point, Chris. Either you're on the plane or you're not.
I'm on the plane. Well, I'm on the plane.
Until 2 days from now, and I'll let you go back on that. Back to that take, okay?
Appreciate that.
Let's take a break. Kurt Warner's going to join us next to bring some sanity to the situation. And then Andrew Whitworth. 844-204-RICH number. I got my power rankings as well. That's when things will go haywire again around here.
That sounds kind of crazy.
The Rich Eisen Show Podcast.
The radio audience just returned. ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Kurt Warner is here explaining what answers to the test Josh McDaniels is giving Drake May. I give you the floor back, sir.
So again, it's full field concepts where they're giving you a concept to the right, a concept to the left. Mm-hmm. Quarterback's job is to read pre-snap, read post-snap, and then get to the side that fits the coverage that you're seeing. And then once you get there, it simplifies it, knowing, oh, I got an inside out over here, or I got a high low over here. And so you can find the guy, the defender that you need to read with your eyes, and you can play the game very quickly. The pure progression type offenses say, okay, we're going to start over here, and it's going to be 1, 2, and 3 over here, and 4 over 5 over here. And so the whole process to me takes longer. And it's not as definitive because we're not basing it off of, if the defense does this, you throw here. We're just saying, oh, if this guy's covered, then move to the next guy and see if he's open, and then see if he's open. And so it speeds the game up. If the quarterback can see it and understand what he's seeing, it speeds the game up. It makes the game easier, quicker, because I know definitively where my read is. And if I don't like, you know, that read off of that defender, then just find your check down or take off and run. And so it becomes a very simplified game. And you can play the game faster, whereas I think the other forces a quarterback to play slower. And, you know, the argument is, okay, it's easier for a quarterback to go pure progression because they don't really have to see anything. They just have to read it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and see if their guy's open and throw it to them. Whereas, you know, the full field is, okay, my quarterback's got to know what he's seeing on the snap and what the coverage is or what his keys are to make him go to the right or to the left and change his progression. But you know, I've been a proponent that I still believe at this level, no matter how good of an athlete that you are, you have to play the game mentally first if you want to be a championship type quarterback or a championship type team. And I see that show up over and over and over again. The quarterbacks that play the best mentally inside the pocket, being able to see their progressions and go through them, are the quarterbacks that are the best quarterbacks in the league. And the other ones is touch and go. Their first or second guy might be open on the progression. Great, it looks really good 1 week, but then doesn't look as good the next week. It's all about consistency, seeing the field, making quick decisions. And the faster you can do that, the more successful you can be. And Drake May is doing that with the help of Josh McDaniel, who is simplifying those things. And again, I don't want to say it's simpler, because seeing the field and reading it and you know, deciphering these coverages isn't easy to do. But if you can do that, then the concepts make the game simpler, in my opinion.
And of course, Drake May is just making it look easy, terms of what you're saying. And clearly it makes sense that you want a quarterback who can play quicker when you keep seeing, and we see it every year at the combine, defensive players getting bigger, stronger, faster, and they're getting home. You know, we saw multiple times on Sunday Night Football, you know, Chris Collinsworth pointing out that if you're going to be playing games at the mesh point in the backfield against the Denver Broncos, they're so damn fast. You can't play slow. You know, if you play slow, you're finished. So I'm kind of, you know, leading our conversation down a certain path. And then we're going to get to the ultimate question about what to do with the quarterback play in this league in 2025. Caleb Williams, is he playing faster? What has Ben Johnson done to change things around there? Obviously, the win-loss record is different, but we're also seeing, I think, Caleb more confident. He's not making mistakes. He still has trouble with accuracy, but it does feel like he's more in control here.
Kurt. Yeah, I mean, he definitely, you know, seems more comfortable with what they're asking him to do. Now, Ben Johnson does run a number of what I would call pure progressions. But I think he ties it in really well, because within his pure progressions, a lot of times he has good, solid what I call defender read type plays. So he's still trying to tell his quarterback to kind of read through that progression, but he's trying to still put somebody in conflict with, say, you know, read one and two or read two and three. So if we get there and this guy's covered, this next guy, based on the design of the play, should be open. So I think that the scheme helps Caleb Williams to play a little bit more fast, or I guess more comfortable, I would say. He's still got, you know, room to grow. You know, there's times his eyes start on the wrong spot for me. There's times that he hesitates too much. You mentioned it. He's missing too many layups still. But, you know, we were talking about it on game day morning, me and Daniel Jeremiah. And Daniel was saying that, you know, at the NFL level, you need one of two things with your starting quarterback. You either need great efficiency or you need explosive plays. Now, if you can have both, obviously that's the pick of the litter right there. But you need one of the two. And right now, Caleb's not playing extremely efficiently. He's missing a lot of throws that you just have to make. But he has the explosive part of it, whether that's a scramble, big play, whether that's, you know, four or five big throws inside the pocket. You know, I'm seeing him when he's really definitive on certain things. He's making some really special throws to his number one reads that maybe a lot of guys in the league don't make. And so he's got that explosiveness. They've got turnovers on defense and they're running the football well. That's why they're winning. Now they just need to find a way to get him more efficient, you know, in making more of those layups to go along with a few of those explosive plays. And then I think you see the trajectory go like this, and why Ben Johnson was saying, you know, we're kind of winning in spite of our pass game right now. It's not as efficient as we want it to be. But Caleb is doing enough to go along with the other things to obviously keep them on the winning path.
What's happening to the Colts offense? You know, by the way, I think I'm done with the Eagles question with you, right? Yeah. I mean, because unless you're not. I mean, but
it's the same stuff there. So, yeah, let's go to the Colts.
Because the AFC South is wide open now, sir. You know,
it is
you
wide
and
open.
You and I both know it. And this offense that was cooking over the first 2 months that helped lead them to that 8-1 record, they're 7-1 record. They're now 8-4, sir. Has something changed?
I think the natural thing for most people is to point right at Daniel Jones and say, well, Daniel Jones isn't that top tier quarterback. And maybe true. I mean, we haven't seen anything to say that he's, you know, top tier, like best in the league. But we saw him play really good football, obviously, through the first half of the year. And it hasn't been as good these last couple of weeks. And what I believe the biggest issue is that first, it's a run first team. Like, they were having success throwing the football, no question, but it was really about balance. And it was about teams, you know, having to really focus on Jonathan Taylor first and then the pass game second. And within that, Daniel Jones was playing great football, and he was he was a perfect complement to what they were doing. Okay. They haven't been running the football quite as effectively, getting as many big plays in the run game. And so now it falls a little bit more to their pass game to be a little bit more dynamic and a little bit more efficient there. And as much as we can point to Daniel Jones, that obviously he's got to play better, you know, and we also have to kind of figure out what is his ceiling. But I also don't know if you look at this pass game and the pieces on the outside, that they're going to be a great pass team. I mean, Michael Pittman, a good receiver. He's not the most dynamic guy in terms of, you know, giving you big plays and catch a short pass and go long distance. Pierce, again, a good player, but more of a down the field guy, not a guy that's going to win with all of his route running and be dynamic there. And so I don't know if, you know, again, we're going to point at Daniel Jones and say, well, I don't know if he can be the quarterback to lead a pass game when you have to throw the ball 40 times. I'm not sure this is a pass game that's built to be able to carry a team when you have to throw 40 times. It's kind of the same conversation we've had with the Steelers for a number of weeks on game day morning, is that I'm just not sure they have the pieces to be a pass team. And so they have to be able to run the football and allow that to be the complementary part of it. Good players. And Daniel Jones has played good, but there's a difference between being good and being a unit that can carry a team against good defenses like the Houston Texans and so forth, you know, going through the season. So that to me is what I see, is they still have to be a run first team. and they've got to win and get some big plays there. And then I believe Daniel Jones and their complementary pass game is definitely good enough to make a run in the AFC. I just don't know if it is, if they're not able to run the football down the stretch, and it's going to fall all to passing game having to be consistently good and consistently explosive.
In the few minutes I have left with you, Kurt Warner, week 14 is just huge. I can't wait for our game day morning show. I mean, it's just, there's so many different directions we can go in, as we're now in the entire league is in the December football schedule, as opposed to just that first Monday night game of the month. Let's do some somewhat quick hitters. The Cowboys Lions game will come down to what?
I think it's really going to come down to if Detroit can run the football. They've got some injuries. Amon-Ra, probably isn't going to play based on what we're hearing. They're going to have to win running the football and getting back to making some big plays there. And then on the flip side, obviously the Cowboys made these moves to stop the run. Can they stop the run and force the pass game of Detroit to beat them? I think will be the key.
Okay. Packers and Bears playing for the first of two times over the next 3 weeks, with the division completely up in the air right now, will come down to what in Lambeau Field on Sunday?
I think it's two things. I think it's Jordan Love taking care of the football, because the Bears, albeit not great on defense, they've been great at getting turnovers, and that's been the difference for them. And then I think, like we saw last week, is can the Packers stop the run? The Bears were awesome running the football against the Eagles. And we talked earlier about Caleb just being explosive but not efficient. If you can force it into Caleb Williams' hands and force him to have to be efficient, I think that's the best formula for the Packers to get the win.
Okay. And now the Steelers and the Ravens, both at 6-6, leaking oil coming off of last week. What do you have? That'll come down to what there?
I really feel it's going to come down to the Ravens' offense.
What is wrong with it? Defense, what is happening with the Ravens' offense right now? Does Lamar look the same to you? Does he look? What's happening?
He doesn't look the same. He doesn't look as comfortable. And it's both the running. I actually thought it looked like he added that gear this past week, running the football, which I felt like he was still a little slow in that area before. But I thought he added that gear. But I still feel like he's uncomfortable in the pocket right now. And so he makes some great throws without question, but he's missing some throws, and he's missing them badly, which isn't normal, for Lamar Jackson. And so there's something going on there since he's came back where he just hasn't looked and felt as comfortable to me. But he's still, he's a guy kind of like Caleb that is always going to give you some explosive. And so he usually does enough for them to win, but he hasn't been the efficient and explosive Lamar Jackson that we've seen. So he's missed some opportunities that normally he makes and are difference makers. And so, this pass, I think it really just comes down to that offense. How efficient is that offense? They should have won against Cincinnati last week, but they just turned the ball over and made a bunch of fluky, weird plays in that game that just gave Cincinnati opportunity after opportunity. And that, to me, is this game. I'm not sure the Steelers, are better in any facet unless the Ravens help them out. Mm. And so, to me, it's going to come down to Lamar Jackson and the efficiency of that Ravens offense. But I definitely think the Ravens are the better team.
And at the same time, in the 8-game one Eastern window, 8 games going on at once, Joe Burrow and the Bengals in Buffalo. Man, that will come down to what?
That's a good question. I think it'll probably come down to Cincinnati's defense stopping the run more than anything else. Can they bow up and give Joe some opportunities? I think Joe's going to find ways to score the football as he always does. But if you can, the slow death of Buffalo running the football, as we saw last week, I think is going to be key. If you can force Josh and that, group to have to throw it continually, I think there'll be some mistakes. Josh is at times playing really fast this year, faster than he needs to in the pass game. So they settle it down by running the football. So that, to me, is going to be the key facet, I believe, of this game.
And then Sunday Night Football, I think I know what the answer is, but I'll say it anyway because the Chiefs are at 6-6. The Texans and the Chiefs come down to what on Sunday night?
Oh, man. You know, as crazy as it sounds, because I know we want to probably talk about Mahomes against that defense, which is obviously going to be
a
critical factor.
Yes.
I'm going the other side. I thought C.J. Stroud played one of his best games. I'm a little worried coming out back off the three games out with the concussion. I thought he played one of his best games of the year last week.
Mm-hmm.
And so I believe it could come down to that side, because early in the year, it was more about the defense holding things down. And the offense really couldn't get anything going. The offense got some things going and looked pretty good last week at times. And so if they can take that next step offensively with some of the struggles against the Chiefs that we've seen from the Chiefs defense, I believe that could be the key factor, because Mahomes is going to win some. The Texans defense is going to win some. You know, that's going to be a great matchup and a fun matchup to watch. But I think it could fall on the other side. How efficient is C.J. Stroud? And if he makes a step from what they did last week, that could go a long way in getting them this win.
I mean, I would ask you about the Eagles-Chargers game, what it comes down to, but we just don't know the state of Justin Herbert's non-throwing hand. We don't know, is it going to be Trey Lance? All I know is I think the Eagles are going to get what they need the most right now, which is a home game on the road, you know, where the stadium is filled with their fans who aren't ready to boo. Because they're at home. I'm serious. I'm not being facetious. Like, you know how it is on at home for Chargers home games. And, you know, and I'm not denigrating. I was there when another Pennsylvania team was there for a Sunday night, and it was Steelers, and the Chargers crushed them. They killed them. But I don't know. The Eagles going in here, maybe being on the road, bonding together. I don't know. It's a big question mark. It's such a what the hell's going on?
Kurt. Yeah, it is. And I don't think anybody can put their finger on it outside of just the fact that I really believe they came into the season as they have the last few years saying, this is who we are. We've got the same pieces that won a championship last year. We're going to play the same way. We're going to run the football and we're going to dominate the run game. And that's going to be the centerpiece of things. And then we'll throw as a compliment. And it hasn't played out that way. Injuries up front, for whatever reason, you know, even with the guys healthy, that they're not running the football. They're not getting big plays. It's stagnant in the run game. And now they're trying to figure out, okay, how do we change this, or what can we become in the middle of a season to get back to playing really good football? And it's a hard thing to do when you come into the season going, we really believe this is what we're going to be. And so everything went into building it that way, and it's not working. It's not working running the football. And I know it's easy to say, well, let's just keep doing it and we'll get some guys healthy and we'll get there. You know, you hear me all the time on Sundays talk about, we want to believe that all the time with these teams that we've seen be there before, and the Chiefs, okay, you know, that they're going to flip the switch because they've been there before. And, you know, oftentimes in this league, we have to believe what people show us they are, or what teams show us they are in the course of that season. And right now, this Eagles offense is a struggle. It's a struggle across the board to figure out what their identity is, what they can be good at, and they haven't figured it out. And so until they do, I think this is what we're going to see. We're going to see every game muddled up. And they hope they keep it close, and they've got enough playmakers to win a lot of those games, as we've seen that way. But they're not doing anything really well right now, and it's why it's showing up every week that it's just, it's just their offense is just kind of muddled up and it doesn't look pretty.
Kurt, thanks very much for the time. We got to step out of bounds because the heartbreak's coming like the Patriots defense, okay?
All right, buddy.
We got to avoid the hit. Take care. That's Kurt Warner, everybody, right here. He's going to be on NFL Game Day Morning on Sunday. He's on the Rich Eisen Show every Wednesday. Check out QB Confidential. It is awesome. 844-204-RICH, number to dial on the program.
The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show simulcast, Disney Plus, ESPN app, ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Take the next step forward in your career with great benefits and an award-winning workplace. Apply at careers.progressive.com. All right, so the Hall of Fame has got different ways of going about its business these days. They changed some rules around over the last couple of years about how you can get in and what committees can get you in and how many votes you need to get. And so the committee that chooses head coaches to be placed as a finalist in front of the voters to get 80% of the votes, along with the committee that puts together a list of contributors to be placed as the one finalist from that category to be placed in front of the voters to get 80% of the votes, also has a pool of candidates from a Veterans Committee, right? Essentially. And they have three finalists. And from that group, one coach, one owner, three others who are placed in front of the voters, that pool of five, whoever gets 80% with the maximum of three of the five are coming up. I think I've set this up properly, correct?
Yes, sir.
All right.
My numbers.
So, and then there's the other pool of just people who are eligible for the Pro Football Hall of Fame through regular, you're still eligible after your playing days means.
Right.
That's a different category.
Yeah, that's at a semifinal list right now.
Correct. Well, there's a list of finalists for the veteran players. LC Greenwood. Folks remember him back in the day from the Steelers.
Those yellow shoes were iconic.
Okay. Ken Anderson.
Yeah.
The quarterback of the Cincinnati Bengals. And Roger Craig, who is long overdue for the San Francisco 49ers. Okay. See, when he's crying, he met Christian McCaffrey the other day, right? Remember, you see this fellow there? He got all teary.
I can see that.
Yeah, it was really nice. Because before there was McCaffrey, there was Craig.
Before there was Marshall Faulk, before there was
correct
many of these.
Absolutely. Indeed, sir.
Yeah, for sure.
The coach, no surprise, is Bill Belichick, because now you're allowed to, you don't have to wait all these years. You can get it. And the contributor slash owner is Robert Kraft. And that is long overdue as well. This man is 84 years old.
Sure is.
Okay, yeah. and
he should have been in already. Like, come on.
He should have been in already.
Please. All right? And it's not just the trophies, it's everything that he stood for, broadcast, NFL Network.
Oh, ending the lockout.
The lockout.
Yeah.
Him and Jeff Saturday sat down and got the lawyers out of the room to figure the thing out. So, if you get 80% of the vote and Belichick gets 80% of the vote and Kraft gets 80% of the vote, then Kraft and Belichick are going to go into the Pro Football Hall of Fame together, which is fitting for all the trophies and all
sure
the winning.
Sure is.
But for their current relationship,
yeah.
Might be one of those, congratulations.
Yep.
Boom! Or this is what both of these guys need if you're looking at a glass half full and you want everybody to get along in the world. Going to the Hall of Fame together is truly a bonding experience, unlike any that I've seen up close.
I mean, I'd have to imagine.
It is. Families hang out, and they all know each other, and right now it's not pretty, but it would be immensely fitting. Kraft and Belichick in the same Hall of Fame class would be wild, and it looks like it, it could be one over the other. It could be neither. That would be ridiculous, though. They should both get in.
The Rich Eisen Show Podcast.